Well, good afternoon, everyone, on this beautiful and yet mild Day of Atonement. We had quite a bit of rain this morning at our house. I'd like to welcome everybody that's on the webcam or the web watching in today. We will be taking up an offering after this sermonette, so if you need a green envelope, raise your hand and one of the ushers will give you one. You know, we're gathered here today to observe the Day of Atonement, which is listed among the God's holy days in Leviticus 23, and starting in verse 26. Leviticus 23, verse 26. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Also, the tenth day of the seventh month shall be a Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls." The term "afflict your souls" refers to fasting or abstaining from food and water. "And an offering made by fire to the Lord." Verse 28, "And you shall do no work on that same day, for it is the Day of Atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God." The meaning of atonement, according to dictionary.com, is to make satisfaction or pay reparation for a wrong or injury, to make amends, or the doctrine concerning the reconciliation of God and humankind, especially as accomplished through the life, suffering, and death of Christ. Picking up in verse 29, "For any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people, and any person who does any work on that same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings." Verse 32, "It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening. From evening to evening you shall celebrate your Sabbath." I'd like to refer you to the article on ucg.org in the Bible Study Tools Bible Questions and Answers section entitled, "If I Have Health Problems, Should I Fast?" From which I quote, "Each person's case is unique. Many have forms of diabetes or hypoglycemia, anemia, chemo, etc. Worry about the potential for fasting to cause them to pass out or end up in the doctor's office," end quote. There is more to the article to which I would have you refer, but those that have health issues do not need to fast today. Other instructions in Leviticus 16 regarding the Day of Atonement and about approaching the mercy seat within the Holy of Holies in the temple after the death of Aaron's two sons because they had offered profane fire to the Lord, they were instructed to bring two kid goats, one of which was to be offered as a sin offering for the congregation. We'll see in verse 15 of chapter 16. Verse 15 of chapter 16, "Then he, Aaron, shall kill the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people. Bring its blood inside the veil. Do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle it on the mercy seat and before the mercy seat." The high priest was to do this once a year on the Day of Atonement. This goat became a sin offering, and it is reflected of how Jesus Christ became a sin offering for each of us, in much the same way as the lamb set aside prior to the Passover. When the one who was the Word, who became Christ, gave these instructions to ancient Israel, he knew full well what this goat portrayed and that it was the role that he would fulfill when he would come to this earth as a human to become our Savior and Redeemer. Christ became a sin offering to pay the penalty of sin by allowing himself to be sacrificed for us. We see in Hebrews 9, verse 11. "But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is not of this creation. Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all time, for all peoples, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Verse 15, and for this reason, he is the mediator of the new covenant by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of eternal inheritance. Jumping down to verse 18, therefore not even the first covenant was dedicated without blood. For when Moses had spoken every precept to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of calves and goats with water, scarlet wool, and hyssop, and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, this is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you. We are reconciled to God through the shed blood of Jesus Christ, which he symbolically brought before God into the Holy of Holies. When we are reconciled to God through the blood of Christ, what we lack is made up by the blood of Christ. The blood of Christ makes up the difference from what we are to what we should be. This passage in Hebrew refers to when Israel came before God to ratify the old covenant. In Exodus 19 and verse 5, we read, now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. In much the same way, we as Christians are going to be kings and priests of our God in his soon coming kingdom. In chapters 20 to 23 of Exodus, God proclaimed the Ten Commandments and other various laws and ordinances which the Israelites were to follow. They were part of his covenant, his contract, a marriage covenant with them. They were to become his people, and he was to become their God. And in Exodus 24, verse 6, we read, and Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant, which is all that God had spoken in chapters 20 through 23, which Moses had written down into the book of the covenant, and he read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. The Israelites entered into a covenant with God, a marriage contract. They would become his chosen people. Just as a bride takes the name of her husband, they would take his name upon themselves as a nation and people of God. They were to become one with him. God had warned them back of the importance of this decision back in Exodus 20 and verse 7, where he said, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. God warned them that they should not enter into this covenant with him in a nonchalant manner. At baptism, we become the betrothed bride of Christ. We take his name, Christian, upon ourselves, and God will not hold us guiltless if we take that name, Christian, in vain. Take it for granted, for we are a chosen generation of kings and priests. The word atonement can be broken down into three parts. At one, meaning at one with. The focus of the Day of Atonement is that it symbolizes our becoming at one with God. To become one with God, we are to do so by getting to know God, and he in turn gets to know us. Through grace, God nurtures our relationship with him. In the church's booklet on grace, there's a listing on page 9, which says God's grace at work. It lists all the things that God does for us by his grace. The very first bullet point is through grace, God helps us to come to know him and his and Jesus Christ, his son, referencing 2 Peter 3, verse 18. God gets to know us by how we respond to the various trials that we experience in life. How we handle them shows God our commitment to him He sees the conflicts that we experience and the emotions that oftentimes overtakes us. He sees our struggle with temptations and our battle to overcome sin. We should have joy through our trials because God is getting to know us. God is watching how we respond to trials. When we go to God in prayer for help, He is getting to know us. He gets to know our feelings. Through obedience to His commands, we demonstrate to Him our commitment to Him. Through the many trials we experience in life, God is testing us, trying us, purifying us like the smelter of silver and gold who applies heat until he sees his image. We become one with God only after we totally commit ourselves to him. In order for us to handle the trials of life, God gives us an advocate through Jesus Christ, his son. Christ pleads our case. We read in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17, therefore, Hebrews 2 verse 17, therefore, in all things he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. You really get to know someone when you live with them. If God abides within us, if he dwells in our flesh, he will truly get to know us. In 1 John chapter 4 and verse 2, 1 John chapter 4 and verse 2, we read, by this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. Here we see that Jesus Christ will come in the flesh. He will come into our flesh and will abide with us. He will become at one with us. In 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 9, 1 Corinthians 3 verse 9, we read that we are where God resides, for we are laborers together with God. You are God's husbandry. You are God's building. He is creating us into a building where he can dwell and really get to know us. If we drop down to verse 16 states, know you not that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? Not only are we a building, we are a temple, God's temple. In John 14, verse 23, John 14, verse 23, Jesus answered and said unto them, if a man love me, he will keep my words, his commands, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. We see that both God and Christ will abide in us. We see that God dwells in us if we keep his commands. If we were to ever stray from the commands of God, he would cease to dwell within us. On the evening before Christ's crucifixion, what was the most important thing on his mind? We read it in John 17 and verse 20. John 17 and verse 20. I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. He prayed that we would become one. Let's continue to get to know God and allow God to get to know us. Let him come and live within us. Talk to him by reaching out to him in prayer and listen to his words as he speaks through his word. By doing these things, we all will become one with God.